Chapter 31. An obliterated inscription, or an undamaged crowned head, among them. There is little noise without, abundant space, and no confusion. The open area devoted to the market is divided into three portions. The calf market, the cattle market, the sheep market. Calves at 8, cattle at 10, sheep at midday. All is very clean. The calf market is a raised platform of stone, some 3 or 4 feet high, open on all sides, with a lofty overspreading roof, supported on stone columns, which give it the appearance of a sort of vineyard from northern Italy. Here, on the raised pavement, lie innumerable calves, all bound hind legs and fore legs together, and all trembling violently, perhaps with cold, perhaps with fear, perhaps with pain. For, this mode of tying, which seems to be an absolute superstition with the peasantry, can hardly fail to cause great suffering. Here, they lie, patiently in rows, among the straw, with their stolid faces and inexpressive eyes, superintended by men and women, boys and girls. Here they are inspected by our friends, the butchers, bargained for, and bought. Plenty of time, plenty of room. Plenty of good humor. Monsieur Francois in the bearskin, how do, my friend? You come from Paris by the train? The fresh air does you good. If you are in want of 3 or 4 fine calves this market morning, my angel, I, Madame Dodge, shall be happy to deal with you. Behold these calves, Monsieur Francois. Great heaven, you are doubtful. Well, sir, walk round and look about you. If you find better for the money, buy them. If not, come to me. Monsieur Francois goes his way leisurely, and keeps a wary eye upon the stock. No other butcher jostles Monsieur Francois. Monsieur Francois jostles no other butcher. Nobody is flustered and aggravated. Nobody is savage. In the midst of the country, blue frocks and red handkerchiefs, and the butcher's coats, shaggy, furry, and hairy, of calf skin, cow skin, horse skin, and bear skin, towers a cocked hat and a blue cloak. Slavery. For our police wear great coats and glazed hats. But now the bartering is over, and the calves are sold. Ho! Gregor, Antoine, John, Louis, bring up the carts, my children. Quick, brave infants. Hola! Hi! The carts, well littered with straw, are backed up to the edge of the raised pavement, and various hot infants carry calves upon their heads, and dexterously pitch them in, while other hot infants, standing in the carts, arrange the calves, and pack them carefully in straw. Here is a promising young calf, not sold, whom Madame Dodge unbinds. Pardon me, Madame Dodge, but I fear this mode of tying the fore legs of a quadruped together, though strictly a la mode, is not quite right. You observe, Madame Dodge, that the cord leaves deep indentations in the skin, and that the animal is so cramped at first as not to know, or even remotely suspect, that he is unbound, until you are so obliging as to kick him, in your delicate little way, and pull his tail like a bell rope. Then, he staggers to his knees, not being able to stand, and stumbles about like a drunken calf, or the horse at Franconi's, whom you may have seen, Madame Dodge, who is supposed to have been mortally wounded in battle. But, what is this rubbing against me, as I apostrophize Madame Dodge? It is another heated infant with a calf upon his head. Pardon, monsieur, but will you have the politeness to allow me to pass? Ah, sir, willingly. I am vexed to obstruct the way. On he staggers, calf and all, and makes no allusion, whatever either to my eyes or limbs. Now, the carts are all full. More straw, my Antoine, to shake over these top rows. Then, off we will clatter, rumble, jolt, and rattle, a long row of us, out of the first town gate, and out at the second town gate, and past the empty sentry box, and the little thin square bandbox of a guardhouse, where nobody seems to live. And away for Paris, by the paved road, lying, a straight line, in the long, long avenue of trees. We can neither choose our road, nor our pace, for that is all prescribed to us. The public convenience demands that our carts should get to Paris by such a route, and no other Napoleon had leisure to find that out, while he had a little war with the world upon his hands, and woe betide us if we infringe orders. Drovers of oxen stand in the cattle market, tied to iron bars fixed into posts of granite. Other droves advance slowly down the long avenue, past the second town gate, and the first town gate, and the sentry box, and the bandbox, thawing the morning with their smoky breath as they come along. Plenty of room, plenty of time. Neither man nor beast is driven out of his wits by coaches, carts, wagons, omnibuses, gigs, chaises, phaetons, cabs, trucks, boys, whoopings, roarings, and multitudes. No tail twisting is necessary, no iron pronging is necessary. There are no iron prongs here. The market for cattle is held as quietly as the market for calves. In due time, off the cattle go to Paris. The drovers can no more choose their road, nor their time, nor the numbers they shall drive, than they can choose their hour for dying in the course of nature. Sheep next. The sheep pens are up here, past the branch bank of Paris established for the convenience of the butchers, and behind the two pretty fountains they are making in the market. My name is Bull. Yet I think I should like to see as good twin fountains, not to say in Smithfield, but in England anywhere. Plenty of room, plenty of time. And here are sheep dogs, sensible as ever, but with a certain French air about them, not without a suspicion of dominoes, with a kind of flavor of mustache and beard, demonstrative dogs, shaggy and loose where an English dog would be tight and close, not so troubled with business calculations as are English drovers' dogs, who have always got their sheep upon their minds, and think about their work, even resting, as you may see by their faces. But, dashing, showy, rather unreliable dogs, who might worry me instead of their legitimate charges, if they saw occasion, and might see it somewhat suddenly. The market for sheep passes off like the other two, and away they go, by their allotted road to Paris. My way being the railway, I make the best of it at 20 miles an hour, whirling through the now high-lighted landscape, thinking that the inexperienced green buds will be wishing, before long, they had not been tempted to come out so soon, and wondering who lives in this or that chateau, all window and lattice, and what the family may have for breakfast this sharp morning. After the market comes the abattoir. What abattoir shall I visit first? Montmartre is the largest, so I will go there. The abattoirs are all within the walls of Paris, with an eye to the receipt of the octroi duty, but they stand in open places in the suburbs, removed from the press and bustle of the city. They are managed by the syndicate or guild of butchers, under the inspection of the police. Certain smaller items of the revenue derived from them are in part retained by the guild for the payment of their expenses, and in part devoted by it to charitable purposes in connection with the trade. They cost £680,000, and they return to the city of Paris an interest on that outlay, amounting to nearly 6.5%. Here, in a sufficiently dismantled space, is the abattoir of Montmartre, covering nearly 9 acres of ground, surrounded by a high wall, and looking from the outside like a cavalry barrack. At the iron gates is a small functionary in a large cocked hat. Monsieur desires to see the abattoir? Most certainly. Apostrophe state being inconvenient in private transactions, and Monsieur being already aware of the cocked hat, the functionary puts it into a little official bureau which it almost fills, and accompanies me in the modest attire, as to his head of ordinary life. Many of the animals from Poissy have come here. On the arrival of each drove, it was turned into yonder ample space, where each butcher who had bought, selected his own purchases. Some, we see now, in these long perspectives of stalls with a high overhanging roof of wood and open tiles rising above the walls. While they rest here, before being slaughtered, they are required to be fed and watered, and the stalls must be kept clean. A stated amount of fodder must always be ready in the loft above, and the supervision is of the strictest kind. The same regulations apply to sheep and calves, for which portions of these perspectives are strongly railed off. All the buildings are of the strongest and most solid description. After traversing these layers, through which, besides the upper provision for ventilation just mentioned, there may be a thorough current of air from opposite windows in the side walls, and from doors at either end, we traverse the broad, paved courtyard until we come to the slaughterhouses. They are all exactly alike, and adjoin each other, to the number of 8 or 9 together, in blocks of solid building. Let us walk into the first. It is firmly built and paved with stone. It is well lighted, thoroughly aired, and lavishly provided with fresh water. It has 2 doors opposite each other, the first, the door by which I entered from the main yard, the second, which is opposite, opening on another smaller yard, where the sheep and calves are killed on benches. The pavement of that yard, I see, slopes downward to a gutter, for its being more easily cleansed. The slaughterhouse is 15 feet high, 16 feet and a half wide, and 33 feet long. It is fitted with a powerful windlass, by which one man at the handle can bring the head of an ox down to the ground, to receive the blow from the poleaxe that is to fell him with the means of raising the carcass, and keeping it suspended during the after operation of dressing, and with hooks on which carcasses can hang, when completely prepared, without touching the walls. Upon the pavement of this first stone chamber lies an ox scarcely dead. If I accept the blood draining from him into a little stone well in a corner of the pavement, the place is free from offense as the Place de la Concorde. It is infinitely purer and cleaner, I know, my friend the functionary, than the Cathedral of Notre Dame. Ha, ha! Monsieur is pleasant, but, truly, there is reason to, in what he says. I look into another of these slaughterhouses. Pray enter, apostrophe says a gentleman in bloody boots. This is a calf I have killed this morning. Having a little time upon my hands, I have cut and punctured this lace pattern in the coats of his stomach. It is pretty enough. I did it to divert myself. Apostrophe it is beautiful, monsieur, the slaughterer. Apostrophe apostrophe he tells me I have the gentility to say so. I look into rows of slaughterhouses. And many retail dealers, who have come here for the purpose, are making bargains for meat. There is killing enough, certainly, to satiate an unused eye, and there are steaming carcasses enough, to suggest the expediency of a fowl and salad for dinner, but, everywhere, there is an orderly, clean, well-systematized routine of work in progress, horrible work at the best, if you please. But, so much the greater reason, why it should be made the best of. I don't know, I think I have observed, my name is Bull, that a Parisian of the lowest order is particularly delicate, or that his nature is remarkable for an infinitesimal infusion of ferocity. But, I do know, my potent, grave, and common counseling signers, that he is forced, when at this work, to submit himself to a thoroughly good system, and to make an Englishman very heartily ashamed of you. Here, within the walls of the same abattoir, in other roomy and commodious buildings, are a place for converting the fat into tallow and packing it for market, a place for cleansing and scalding calves' heads and sheep's feet, a place for preparing tripe stables and coach houses for the butcher's innumerable conveniences, aiding in the diminution of offensiveness to its lowest possible point, and the raising of cleanliness and supervision to their highest. Hence, all the meat that goes out of the gate is sent away in clean covered carts. And if every trade connected with the slaughtering of animals were obliged by law to be carried on in the same place, I doubt, my friend, now reinstated in the cocked hat whose civility these 2 francs imperfectly acknowledge, but appear munificently to repay, whether there could be better regulations than those which are carried out at the abattoir of Montmartre. Adieu, my friend, for I am away to the other side of Paris, to the abattoir of Grenelle. and there I find exactly the same thing on a smaller scale, with the addition of a magnificent artesian well, and a different sort of conductor, in the person of a neat little woman with neat little eyes, and a neat little voice, who picks her neat little way among the bullocks, in a very neat little pair of shoes and stockings. Such is the monument of French folly which a foreigneering people have erected, in a national hatred and antipathy for common counseling wisdom. That wisdom, assembled in the city of London, having distinctly refused, after a debate of 3 days long, and by a majority of nearly 7-1, to associate itself with any metropolitan cattle market, unless it be held in the midst of the city, it follows that we shall lose the inestimable advantages of common counseling protection, and be thrown, for a market, on our own wretched resources. In all human probability we shall thus come, at last, to erect a monument of folly very like this French monument. If that be done, the consequences are obvious. The leather trade will be ruined, by the introduction of American timber, to be manufactured into shoes for the fallen English. The Lord Mayor will be required, by the popular voice, to live entirely on frogs. And both these changes will how, is not at present quite clear, but certainly somehow, or other, fall on that unhappy landed interest which is always being killed, yet is always found to be alive and kicking. Footnotes. 1. Give a bill, 2. 3 months imprisonment as reputed thieves. End of Project Gutenberg's A Text of Reprinted Pieces, by Charles Dickens. CDRPR by Gutenberg Edition.